Welcome back, everyone, to The Deep Dive. You know how this works. You bring the curiosity, and we bring the expertise.
That's right. And today, we're diving into something you've all been asking about how Buddha's journey can be relevant to us here today.
I've got to say, when I first saw your notes, I was intrigued, but honestly, a little skeptical. I mean, Buddha, ancient India.
Right. It seems like a world away, but hear me out.
Okay, I'm all ears.
What if we look at Buddha's life, not just as history, but as a story? A hero's journey, like Joseph Campbell talked about.
So like those classic myths with patterns that show up over and over again.
Exactly. And those patterns, they tend to reflect something deep about the human experience.
Okay, I'm starting to see where you're going with this.
So we've got Siddhartha Gautama, born into luxury, shielded from all the bad stuff.
Not exactly relatable for most of us, right?
True. But even though most of us aren't royalty, stick with me. Haven't you ever felt that even when things are good, there's this nagging sense of unrest?
Oh, absolutely. Like, no matter how much you achieve or acquire, something's still missing.
Exactly. And that's precisely what Siddhartha felt. This deep unease, even with every comfort imaginable. That's where his journey really starts.
That makes sense. But wasn't it, like, extreme suffering that really got Buddha going? I mean, my notes mention seeing sickness, old age, death.
Right, right. But that comes later. First, it's this internal feeling, like, is this all there is? Kind of a first world problem, right?
It kind of is, but man, I feel that. I think a lot of people do.
Exactly. And that's where the parallels start to emerge. See, the specifics might be different. But that human desire for something more, that's timeless.
So we can relate to Buddha, not just as some ancient figure, but as someone grappling with something we all experience.
Precisely. And what did he find? The root of this unrest. Dukkha, as they called it in Buddhism. Suffering.
Now that seems a little intense. I mean, my daily grind might be a drag, but I'm not like in agony.
And that's a common misconception. Dukkha isn't just about huge tragedies. It's also that low-grade dissatisfaction, the longing for something more that you were just describing.
Ah, so like that grass is always greener feeling.
Exactly. It's that subtle sense that things could be better, that we're not quite where we should be. That's dukkha.
I'm seeing how this connects now. So if that's the problem, this desire, this dissatisfaction, what was Buddha's solution?
Well, that's where things get really interesting. And where those practices you mentioned, mindfulness and meditation, come in.
Oh, right. My notes said something about those. So they weren't just like for relaxing?
Well, relaxation can happen, sure. But that wasn't the main goal. Buddha saw these practices as tools for understanding the mind itself.
To, like, figure out what's driving all this desire and discontent.
Precisely. To see those patterns, those habits of thinking that keep us stuck in this loop of wanting, striving, and never quite being satisfied.
Okay, that's pretty profound when you put it that way. But what about the Eightfold Path? Isn't that kind of rigid, like a bunch of rules?
That's another common misunderstanding. It's not about being perfect or following strict dogma.
So not like a rule book?
Not at all. Think of it more as a set of guidelines, almost like signposts, pointing you in the direction of a life that minimizes suffering.
Okay, guidelines, not commandments. Got it. But how does all of this connect back to that hero's journey idea? Those archetypes, the mentor and the shadow, those sound fascinating.
Yes, that's where this framework gets really powerful. See, these archetypes, they represent different aspects of the inner journey. The mentor, for example.
Okay, mentors. We all have those, right? People who guide us, teach us, help us see things differently.
Exactly. And in Buddha's journey, he encounters all sorts of teachers offering wisdom, challenging his assumptions, just like we all do in life.
That makes sense. But what about the shadow? That one sounds a bit more intimidating.
The shadow. Well, this is where things get juicy. The shadow, right? Yeah, it's off of the stuff we don't want to look at, the parts of ourselves we'd rather hide.
So like our flaws, our fears, all that.
Exactly. In Buddha's story, it's all the ignorance, the clinging desire, the fear, all that was keeping him trapped in this cycle of suffering.
Okay, so it's like the inner stuff we got to deal with before we can really grow.
Precisely. And those inner battles, they're reflected in all those classic myths too. Oh. Think about it. The hero always has to face their demons, their own darkness, before they can achieve victory.
So it's not some external enemy, but this internal struggle that's the real challenge.
Exactly. And get this for Buddha, a big part of that shadow, it was the idea of the self itself.
Wait, what? The self? Like who we think we are?
Yep. He realized that this idea of a separate fixed me is actually an illusion. It's what causes so much of our suffering because we cling to it so tightly.
Hold on. That's a lot to unpack. Are you saying that the me that I experience isn't even real?
Not that your experiences aren't real, but that the way we grasp onto this idea of a solid, separate me is what's causing the problem.
Okay, I think I'm starting to get it. So it's like we're so attached to this idea of who we are that we get all freaked out when things change, when we don't get what we want, when people don't see us the way we want them to see us.
You got it. And all that grasping, that clinging, it creates tension, anxiety, suffering.
So what's the alternative? If we let go of this self, who are we then?
That's the beautiful paradox. It's in letting go of that rigid sense of self that we actually start to connect with something much bigger, something more expansive.
You mean like a sense of oneness, of interconnectedness?
Exactly. And with that comes a deep sense of peace, of belonging, of wholeness. It's not about erasing your individuality, but realizing that you're also part of something much greater than just this limited me.
Wow. That's mind-blowing. But how do we actually do that? How do we loosen the grip on this idea of self that we're so attached to? It feels pretty ingrained.
That's where those practices we talked about, mindfulness and meditation, come in. They're not just about feeling good, although that can happen, but about training the mind to see things more clearly.
So like seeing through the illusion.
Exactly. By paying attention to our thoughts and feelings without judgment, we start to notice their impermanence. They come and go, like clouds passing in the sky.
And if thoughts and feelings are always changing, then maybe this self we're so attached to is also fluid, not so fixed after all.
Now you're getting it. It's like stepping back from the movie of your life and realizing that you're not just the characters on the screen, but also the awareness that's watching the film.
Whoa, that's a powerful image. It's like we're both the actors and the audience.
Exactly. And from that vantage point, that place of awareness, you can start to see the whole game, the whole drama, without getting so caught up in it.
Okay, that makes sense, but it also sounds incredibly difficult. Our minds are constantly chattering, judging, comparing. How do we quiet that noise enough to see things clearly?
It takes practice, patience, and a good dose of self-compassion. But here's the thing. Every time you notice yourself getting caught up in that mental chatter, every time you bring your attention back to the present moment, you're strengthening that awareness muscle.
So it's not about silencing the mind completely, but about becoming more aware of what's happening in it.
Exactly. And as you do that, as you become more mindful, you start to see those habitual patterns that keep you stuck.
Those patterns that create suffering.
Precisely. And here's the really cool part. Once you see those patterns, you can start to change them. You're not just a puppet on strings anymore. You have choice.
Wow. That's really empowering. It's like we're not just victims of our own minds. We can actually rewire them.
Exactly. You become the architect of your own experience. It's a journey, for sure, but an incredibly rewarding one.
Okay, this is all starting to click, but I have to admit, a part of me is also a bit skeptical. Like, is this kind of lasting peace, this freedom from suffering, even realistic?
Especially in the world we live in today, right? It's like everywhere you turn, there's something telling you that you're not enough, that you need more, that you need be better, do more, have more.
Right. It feels like the whole system is designed to keep us chasing after that external validation, that sense of worth that never seems to last.
You're absolutely right. It's a constant bombardment. But here's the thing. Those messages, they're playing into that same illusion of separateness. They're telling you that you're lacking, that you need something outside of yourself to be complete.
Oh, so it's like the more we buy into that, the more we feed the illusion, the more we suffer.
Exactly. But the good news is that we have a choice. We can choose to step off that treadmill, to turn down the volume on those external messages, and start tuning in to a different frequency.
A frequency of like inner peace and contentment.
Precisely. And that's not about denying the world or becoming some kind of hermit. It's about finding a way to engage with it without getting sucked into that game of constant comparison and striving.
So we don't have to reject everything modern society offers, but we can change our relationship to it.
Exactly. It's about choosing what truly nourishes you, what aligns with your values, and letting go of the rest. It's about recognizing that true happiness, true fulfillment, comes from within, not from external things.
This is all so fascinating. I'm seeing so many connections to my own life, to the challenges I face, to the things I long for. But I'm also wondering, how does this shift in perspective, this understanding of the self as an illusion, how does it change how we relate to others?
Oh, that's a great question. And it brings us to one of the most powerful and transformative aspects of Buddhist teachings, and that is compassion.
Compassion, right. Okay, I get that it's important, but how does it connect to all this? To this idea of the self being an illusion? Does it mean we got to be like nice to everyone all the time?
Think about it this way. If there's no real separation between me and you, if we're all like interconnected, then compassion becomes less about being nice and more about recognizing our shared humanity.
Ah, okay. So it's not about forcing ourselves to feel something, but about seeing that we're all in this together.
Exactly. And honestly, that insight can be incredibly liberating. It frees us from this burden of having to protect and this separate me all the time.
That makes sense. It's like if we're all part of the same fabric, then hurting someone else is kind of like hurting ourselves.
Precisely. And that's not to say we shouldn't have boundaries or that we should tolerate harmful behavior.
Right. Right.
But it does change our perspective. It allows us to approach conflict, disagreement, even suffering with more understanding, more empathy.
So it's not about being a doormat, but about approaching the world with a different kind of awareness.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that everyone is fighting their own battles, carrying their own burdens, and that maybe, just maybe, a little bit of kindness and understanding can make a difference.
I love that. It's like instead of seeing everyone as separate, competing individuals, we can see them as like fellow travelers on this crazy journey.
That's beautifully put. And that shift in perspective, that's where true compassion arises. It's not about pity or judgment. It's about recognizing that we're all interconnected.
Okay. This is all starting to make sense, but I gotta be honest, it also feels a bit daunting. Like, how do we cultivate that kind of compassion in a world that often feels so divided, so full of conflict and suffering?
It's a great question. And it's honestly the heart of what Buddha's teachings are all about. It's not about escaping the world or pretending that everything is perfect. It's about finding ways to embody these values, to put them into practice, even amidst the messiness of everyday life.
Okay, so how do we do that? Where do we even start?
Remember we talked about the middle way? Well, this is where it comes in.
Right, that balance between extremes.
Exactly. The middle way isn't about being passive or avoiding difficult situations. It's about finding that sweet spot, that place of wise and skillful action.
So it's not about retreating from the world, but about engaging with it in a more mindful and compassionate way.
Precisely. And you know what? The Buddha actually offered a pretty clear roadmap for how to do this.
You mean like a set of instructions?
Yeah. It's that eightfold path we talked about earlier, those eight guidelines. They're not just some abstract philosophy. They're actually practical steps for aligning our thoughts, words, and actions with wisdom and compassion.
Okay, remind me again, what are those steps?
Right understanding, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration.
Wow, that's a lot to remember.
I know, right? But each one points to a way of being in the world that supports both individual well-being and a more harmonious society.
Okay, but isn't that setting the bar pretty high? I mean, nobody's perfect. How can we possibly live up to all of that?
It's not about perfection. It's about direction. It's about making an effort to align our actions with our values, even if we stumble along the way. Think about it. Right speech encourages us to communicate honestly and kindly. Right action challenges us to consider the ethical implications of our choices. Right livelihood asks us to find work that's meaningful and doesn't harm others. These are all things we can actively work towards.
Right, right. So it's not about being perfect, but about striving to live in a way that reflects our deepest values.
Exactly. And remember, mindfulness and concentration are also part of the path. Those practices help us develop the awareness we need to see our habitual patterns, to make more conscious choices, and to course correct when we inevitably veer off track.
It strikes me that this whole conversation, this whole deep dive, has really been about connecting these seemingly separate ideas, ancient philosophy, with modern life, personal growth with social change, mindfulness with compassion. It's like we're weaving this big tapestry of interconnectedness.
I love that analogy. It really captures the essence of what makes Buddha's teaching so powerful. They offer a holistic perspective on life. It's not just about individual enlightenment. It's about recognizing that our inner transformation is intertwined with creating a more just, compassionate, and sustainable world.
It's a pretty inspiring vision, wouldn't you say? Even with all the challenges we see in the world today, it offers a sense of hope.
Absolutely. And honestly, it brings us right back to the hero's journey, doesn't it? It's not just about individual transformation. It's about using that transformation to make a positive impact on the world around us.
Yeah, it's like, what's the point of all this inner work if it doesn't ripple outward, if it doesn't make the world a little bit brighter?
That's the challenge and the beauty of this path. It's not about escaping our own suffering. It's about alleviating suffering for ourselves and the others. And that can take many forms. It might be practicing random acts of kindness, engaging in social activism, choosing to live more sustainably, advocating for policies that promote justice and equality. The list goes on.
So it's about taking that inner transformation, that sense of interconnectedness and compassion, and letting it guide our actions in the world.
Precisely. And, you know, it doesn't have to be some grand heroic gesture. It could be as simple as listening attentively to a friend who's going through a tough time, offering a helping hand to a stranger, or choosing to support businesses that align with your values.
Those everyday actions, they might seem small, but they can have a ripple effect, right?
Exactly. Like that image of a pebble being dropped in a pond, the ripples spreading out in all directions. You never know how far your actions might reach, how many lives you might touch. And that can be a powerful source of motivation, especially when we're feeling discouraged by the state of the world.
I love that. It's a reminder that we all have a role to play, no matter how small it might seem.
Absolutely. And that's what makes this journey so worthwhile. Mm-hmm. It's not about achieving some perfect state of enlightenment. It's about showing up every day, making conscious choices, and trusting that even our smallest acts of kindness and compassion can make a difference.
This has been an incredible conversation. Thank you so much. I feel like I have a whole new understanding of Buddha's teachings and their relevance to our lives today.
It's been a joy exploring these ideas with you. And to everyone listening out there, I just want to say, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep. You never know what treasures you might uncover along the way.
Couldn't have said it better myself. That's it for this deep dive, folks. We'll see you next time with more fascinating topics to explore. Until then, keep seeking, keep growing, and keep shining your light. It's